We're going to take your phone calls with Andy Lloyd. We're also going to talk about some other possible tie-ins to his theory of this brown dwarf. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. You know what's so amazing, Andy, is also through other interpretations, people years gone past also theorized about the possibility of this extra star in the system, extra planets, with their own symbolism, did they not?
They did. There's this whole idea of the Nomo star from the Dogon, which Robert Temple's written extensively about. I always loved his work. He's great.
A serious mystery.
Yeah, absolutely. Very smart guy. I saw him give a speech some years ago, and I really like him. You know, he's got a cranky sense of humour. He's great. And, you know, there are various ideas that have come out of mythology all around the world, and it's a powerful symbolism, very powerful to us. You know, it gets right innately into sort of archetypes, our subconscious and such like. And part of my work has been to sort of, I don't know, extrapolate away from Sitchin's core work to do with Mesopotamian texts and the Egyptian text, and to look at how that might have evolved into symbolism that's come up to us today through the alchemists and up through the Freemasons and through other bodies who've produced their own sort of symbolic work. And even in contemporary work now, and I've produced, I suppose, a corpus of material that contains the symbolism of the Dark Star. And I think it's a hidden knowledge, you know, that this stuff's been carried down the generations through either an oral tradition or simply through symbolism in order to safeguard it from the religious powers. We'd really rather not talk about it. Religious sort of, you're getting slightly into a different topic, really, yeah. But monotheistic religions tend to like to hold on to the idea of one sun. because, you know, there's one God, there's one sun. If you bring in a binary model, you have two suns, effectively, although one of them's not much of a sun, but nevertheless, then you have two deities, and that breaks the monotheistic ideals, and it starts to bring in a way, symbolically, starts to bring in the idea of multiple gods, which, again, is sort of along the Sitchin eye.
What's the symbolism behind the Garfield Monument in Washington, D.C.? The assassinated president.
Well, this is he was a Freemason, as were many of the early presidents, and he was assassinated in 1881. And they erected a monument outside, is that the Library of Congress, I think it is? And, you know, obviously it's a big statue of Garfield, but underneath underneath the statue of himself is a rather enigmatic zodiac. And David Overton wrote about this in one of his books to do with the symbolism of the zodiacs in Washington. And he wrote in his book that it was a bit odd because there were, instead of one sun on this zodiac, because the sun appears as part of the zodiac, there were two. And that was a bit odd. That shouldn't be there. And he used that in terms of his interpretations with his, he was interested in the constellation Virgo. He certainly isn't advocating a binary star system. I should make that very clear, because he doesn't. But, you know, I read that and I thought, well, that's very interesting. You know, here we are with this fairly important public monument to a assassinated president of the United States with all this sort of Freemasonry whirling around, and someone goes and puts the zodiac together with two suns on it. It seemed to me very interesting.
That's good.
And I've got that image up on the site. People can go and have a look at that.
All right, let's take some phone calls. You ready?
Okay.
East of the Rockies, Russ in Ohio. Go ahead, Russ.
Yeah, George, I'm sure glad to get a hold of you. This is the third time in the last month I've been able to
Don't say that. You'll violate the rule of one a month.
No, okay. But I'd like to ask Andy some questions about these, what is the Anunnaki or however?
Anunnaki?
Yeah. Where exactly was it that they supposedly came to this planet? And was there any kind of artifacts left behind or any kind of decipherable literature?
See, when they came was during the Ice Age. I think it's probably the easy way of putting it. The Ice Age lasted for about 4 million years and sort of warmed up a little bit over the last 20,000 or so. So they established their base here during a period of time where most of the Earth was covered in ice, which is kind of an odd time to come, really. So they probably liked a colder climate than we've got now. And they appear to have, according to Mr. Sitchin, established themselves in Africa and in Mesopotamia. And the monuments that are could be attributed to them were actually human-built monuments. They appear to have created, there was only about 600 of them here, so 600 people aren't really going to be able to build anything too terrific on their own. And the reason why they genetically modified the primates in Africa and created humans out of them was so that they had some slaves to do all their work for them. So the monuments that are passed down from that time may have been as a result of the directing force of the Anunnaki, who wanted to have temples built by people to them in order to establish power. You know, if you build a great big monument to this chap who lives in a little house on the top of it, then everyone thinks the chap who lives in the house on the top of it is a great man, and that's how the Anunnaki wanted to establish themselves.
Okay, because I wondered, you know, because now you said it was during the Ice Age, because I was curious if maybe you know some of these things, like I'm sure you read in the Chariot of the Gods and all that about the airfields and things that they've been able to see, and I thought maybe that might have some connection with them.
Yeah.
The other question I'd like to ask you was, you were talking about some kind of asteroids or something in between Neptune and the other planet. Do these, are they are just out there just floating around, or do they have a direct orbit just like some of the planets?
Well, they all have direct orbits. They are floating around in the sense, as you say, but they move around the sun in the same way that the asteroids move around the sun and the planets move around the sun. They're all obeying the laws of physics.
Yeah.
The problem is that some of them, they should be moving around in a very orderly way because their orbital relationship should be tied in with Neptune. And that the problem, the anomaly that the astronomers struggle with is the fact that some of them aren't. Some of them are off doing weird and wonderful things. Sedna is a particularly good example. And that creates a bit of a puzzle because no one theorized that that might be the case. And it calls for an outside influence that's kind of pulling them out, which is where the whole idea of another planet beyond them comes in.
Yeah. Well, this original fellow that you had talked about, Zachariah or whatever.
Zachariah Sitchin.
When was it that he came up with this?
Oh, these were years ago.
Theory.
Yeah, 1976. He wrote The 12th Planet, and then he wrote a series of about 7 more books after that, I think it was.
And much more. His last one was about Enki, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, he did a lot of the Book of Enki, and then I think last year he did The End of Days, which is a book which was putting forward his idea about what was all meant by Armageddon and when the dating might be for Nibiru and things like that.
Let's go to Tucson, Arizona. TJ, take it away. You're on with Andy Lloyd.
Yes, sir. I have 2 questions.
Sure.
Okay, TJ.
With all the extinction-level events predicted by the return of Planet X, how could any race be mining for gold or turning monkeys into humans? And my second question is, considering how primates have 2 more chromosomes than humans and other genetic markers, I mean, we're not even primates, so how can you say that we're either evolved or somehow the creation of some genetic manipulation from monkeys or primates or whatever?
Okay.
And we might not have been manipulated by monkey. We could have been from the Neanderthals. Is that not correct, Andy?
No.
Okay.
Not really.
I'm sorry.
The first point about the extinction level events, if you had a planet that's coming in every 3,600 years and an extinction level event is going to be caused by that, then there's no way that there'd be any life on this planet at all. So I'm personally not an advocate of the idea that in 2012 Planet X is going to show up and there's going to be a massive comet that drops on our heads and that's the end of the world. I don't advocate that idea.
Yeah, I doubt that too.
Yeah, so I mean there are a lot of people out there that do, and there's a lot of videos going around on the internet, and you know there's a bit of a buzz because when you talk about 2012 and celestial events, people automatically think, well, we're might be something on our way. And, you know, maybe there is. I couldn't absolutely say so. But I'll put this thought into your head. Hale Bopp, which appeared in our skies 10 years ago, is still visible to astronomers with telescopes. It's out near Neptune, and they can still spot it, even though it's no longer really much of a comet. Now, if they can spot that out near Neptune 10 years after it arrived, then what is the likelihood of them having missed a planet that's only 4 years away? You know, it doesn't really work for me. Going back to your second point about primates, I think this is just probably something we're going to have to agree to disagree on. I recognise that in America there is still a lot of controversy about Darwinism, but I'm very much on the side of evolution. I think that's a case that's been proven. And I do think in the human case there is something very odd that's gone on. There has been some tinkering around, but it's the same sort of tinkering around as we're now doing with genetics. And to be honest, within sort of 10, 20, 30 years, we'll probably be capable of tinkering with ourselves to, you know, mess about and do what the Anunnaki did to us some millions of years ago.
And we probably will do it too.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone will take an ape and try to manipulate its structure and see if they can turn it into a human.
It's quite possible. We'll be very interested. I mean, they've got to build a larynx. That's the only thing that really stands between an ape or a chimpanzee is the larynx. If you can create a voice box, you've got a talking ape, and you're away. You know, that whole thing with Planet of the Apes, Planet of the Apes was absolute mastery. I mean, it was brilliant. And, you know, you do that, you're away and running, because the intelligence of chimpanzees and the intelligence of apes is proven. That the only difference between them and us is talking.
Let's go to Santa Rosa, California. Tom, Wildcard Line. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Andy, great book. I just wanted to ask you a question about the possible pole shift one of these two objects, either the dark star or Nibiru, might cause. Have you heard of that? And is that a possibility of what happened to Atlantis? Perhaps the poles have shifted at one point and Atlantis couldn't handle it and it sunk in the ocean. What's your take on that?
I think that there could be something to the pole shift idea. The reason I say that is because the Sun is a very complex magnetic object. And if you... what we know about it, we're just trying to understand it in the context of the Sun standing alone. If you have a binary system and you have another very strongly magnetically orientated object within the entire system that's doing something with it, and you shift that magnet up and down during the orbit, in the same, it's going to be like having one magnet on the table and moving another magnet near it. The magnetic field is going to fluctuate. Now, as the dark star turns around the Sun, if it's not inclined completely on the same plane as the planet, then that magnetic field alteration is going to be significant, and it may well be that the Sun's field flips about. This is why I quite like Cotterill's work, because he said that the field would flip about every 3,700 years or so, which is quite close to Sitchin stuff. So pole shifts are a very interesting possibility, because you could have the magnetic field of the entire solar system being changed by shifting patterns of the movement of the dark star, and that could affect us. So that possibility I find more exciting. And not only that, it could occur without the dark star actually drawing close to the Earth. It would just be an effect between it and the Sun.
Well, if we're seeing this thing now, is there a possibility that a pole shift could be coming? There's a lot of talk about it. Mm-hmm. Is the Earth certainly changing?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on, for sure. I think the last pole shift was about 700,000 years ago, so it's not a frequent event. But my understanding is that we're kind of due for one. So, you know, yes, if there was a scenario at all that I would agree with to do with, say, 2012 and the solar cycles and the Mayans, I would say it's more likely to be tied in with some kind of solar activity and some kind of change in the Sun's field, and a pole shift could be part of that.
Another quicker question would be, I've been reading a lot of Enoch lately. You've probably heard of that book, being sort of a lost book the Catholics took out the years
ago. Sure, yeah.
And they talk not only of Nephilim, but they talk of Watchers. And from my understanding after reading a lot of this is apparently these heroes of old, men of renown, possibly were the Greek gods, some of these heroes.
The Greek gods?
Yeah, because, see, a lot of the gods that, you know, the Greeks worshipped, you know, Plato, Socrates, all these men that were supposedly superhuman possibly could have been, you know, descendants of the Anunnaki peoples, you know.
Well, it's an interesting idea, Tom, because it brings the Anunnaki closer and closer to us, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're starting to say that there was a series of these heroes or godlike entities who are still living on the earth around about the Greco-Roman era,
right.
Then you can kind of start to extrapolate towards the present time, can't you, really? Because when would they exactly have escaped?
Well, they've always been portrayed as superhuman or extra large. I think of Star Trek sometimes, the episode where the Greek gods were like 80 feet tall, you know, and that's what these Anunnaki are said to be, quite large, giants, you know.
Mm. I suspect they probably can't be too big, because I think they would have scared our women.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, you know, they bred with humans. So in order to have bred with humans, they must have been physiologically similar. There must have been, you know, I mean,
artificial.
Well, yeah, it's possible, but some of the more captivating verses in the Bible describe them as coming down and,
mating,
you know,
yeah.
Well, you get the gist. And you know, I'm sure they were scary lads, but they can't have been too dissimilar to us.
What do you think the future holds for Planet X Research? Where does it go? There's not a lot of you out there doing what you do, handful of them.
There are, and I think that's because we've had some false starts. Planet X research on a scientific level has been going on for 100 years and will continue to go on until, well, it will just carry on until astronomers can definitively say there are no more planets because, you know, our technology has reached such a point that we would have spotted it, and they haven't yet. They haven't reached that point. They will admit they haven't reached that point. So there is, until that time has arrived, and it might be only a decade away, you know, they might produce these sky searches that can say, you know, within 10,000 astronomical units, 100,000 astronomical units, there is nothing bigger than Mars. You know, if that gets to that point, then, you know, game over, really. But until that point, there is that potential. And, you know, I think as long as people don't get too swept up in this idea that every 5 years a new date comes along that's a Planet X event, you know, 2003 ruined us, you know? 2003, there was all this hype about the world's going to end and, you know, you better prepare for destruction and it's on the way and here's the photos and it's all going to happen. And 2004 came round and here we are in 2008, and there was nothing to it at all. And I think Planet X research gets pulled down by this stuff because you're trying to put across a good scientific case for this object being out there. And all people want to hear about, which, you know, I can understand, is that, you know, there's going to be an Armageddon. So, yes, I think that's why we're an embattled species. I think that's why, you know, the subject itself has become discredited.
I would just love to see modern science use some of your theories, some of Sitchin's theories, and try to figure this out.
Yeah, and I think if they had a look into the deepest... See, the thing is that science takes the easy route. When they're looking for objects out in the outer solar system, they tend to look at dark constellations, because if you want to pick out a tiny little object that's moving across the star field, you don't want a really bright, complicated star field. So the astronomers look in the dark star fields like Pisces, and Sagittarius, which is where I think this is for a number of reasons, is probably the brightest constellation in the sky.
No, that's a good point, Sagittarius. Yeah. Andy, we'll talk more with you when we come back, and we'll take final phone calls. On our next Coast to Coast program, first hour, Seth Shostak joins us from SETI. He's on fire. Make sure you tune in to find out why. And then later on in the program, Joshua P. Warren joins us as we talk about UFOs and ghosts. And welcome back with Andy Lloyd, our guest, and final phone calls as well. Andy, let's go back to some final calls. But before we do, where does this all take us? I mean, are you concerned at all? Any fear factor here?
I have always been concerned that this discovery was made some 25 years ago and was covered up. That's always been one of the more darker thoughts I've had about this, that NASA knows all about this thing and for a number of different reasons have decided that we're not ready to know about it yet. Whether that will change in the next few years, I don't know, because it's going to be so many different groups who are going to be using the technology that's capable of finding the dark star that it may just come out anyway. and perhaps we will be ready for it now. But certainly, you know, something happened in IRAS back in the mid-80s that really did suggest that they should know about this thing. And the evidence points towards it in a very indirect way. There's a lot of indirect evidence pointing towards it. So the scientists should really be on top of this by now. I don't really understand why they're not. So is there a cover-up? I don't know. I suspect someone somewhere does know something. And why aren't they telling us? And is there a good reason why they're not telling us? Is there a threat to us from the Anunnaki? So those would be my darkest thoughts, that it's, the problems attached to it aren't necessarily to do with the planet and what it might do to us, but the people who live there and whether we're a threat to them and whether finding out about them would tip them into action. So those are my darker thoughts. Those are the things that stir my brain at night.
Good point. Back to the phones we go. Let's go to Damon in Georgia, wildcard line. Hey, Damon, go ahead.
Mr. Norrie, how are you doing today?
Good, Damon.
And to your distinguished guest, Mr. Lloyd, how are you doing?
Oh, thanks, Damon. No, very
okay,
good, thanks.
Great. I want to be a regular caller on your show, Mr. Norrie, and I want to add my what I feel to your topic tonight, because I, like Mr. Lloyd, I have done a lot of reading. I first started from a more of a biblical background, and I kind of branched on to Sitchings and the metanature and things like that. And I was on a YouTube, and there's a lot of great material there. And I recently read this thing on the dogs, the Dogons. Now, here's the African people that don't even have running water, and they have such deep, what do you call that?
Perspective of the
right, exactly.
System.
Now, and then you go for what we know all about what dig up in Egypt, and I know we like to put this European spin on everything, like civilization started with Alexander, you know, but it was a long civilization before the knowledge that it was even here before then. And I want to ask the question after I say this. My thing is that let's look at why we're digging up. We're not digging up Europe. We're digging up Africa for this stuff. So if we're doing that, what is the African perspective in all of this? Why aren't your callers asking, why are y'all, what's the black perspective here? Where do black people fit into this? Because I got a funny feeling, this is just my opinion, that when this thing comes, which is going to be 2012, it's not going to be any catastrophe. It's going to be the worst thing of all. It's going to be the truth. It's going to be the new, it's going to be an awakening. It's going to be a knowledge. That's what I've always thought it was going to be. And with this thing about the Dogon and the dark star and all this, and I think that's kind of, you know, what they're talking about, what Sitchings' research was on. I think that's what that is. And the last thing, I saw an interesting show on the what's the name, archaeology show. I can't think of the
Discovery?
Yeah, whatever that thing. Well, he made an interesting point. He said, well, from his, what they researched, the Nephilim was what was that man that y'all called, you said it earlier, the not Cro-Magnon,
Neanderthal.
Yeah, he said that they was the Neanderthal man. Well, if that's the case, then that means that if this goes back to what Sitchin's work was, that means that the European, which was basically that type of man, was the created one. And I just want to know your opinion on that and what you felt about that.
Okay.
Not to say anything bad about anything, but just to throw certain things out.
Just lay it out, Andy, the way you feel.
Well, it is kind of interesting that the cradle of civilizations in the past, which are Africa and Mesopotamia, where everything really got kicked off, some of the parts of the world now that have the toughest time. There's no doubt about it. Mesopotamia, I mean, the cradle of civilization, Mesopotamia, is modern-day Iraq. And, you know, when there was invasion by the American and the British forces some years ago, there was a lot of concern about what happened with all the monuments. And a lot of people speculated at the time, were they going in there because they wanted to get stuff out that would give them knowledge about all this stuff that we've been talking about tonight? Because, you know, the libraries of cuneiform texts and the information and the knowledge is still there. And a lot of it hasn't been translated. An awful lot of those clay tablets have never been translated. There's a huge amount of academic work to still be done. I totally agree with you, Damon, about the Dogon. I mean, they're remarkable people out of Africa. And how connected they were with the flowering of Egyptian civilization is not particularly clear. They were quite isolated, weren't they? From a social perspective, I'm on your side, chap. Really, I am. You know, those parts of the world have had a bad time of it in recent years, and 2012, maybe things are changing. I mean, the world, economically at the moment, on its own, without any of this, what we're talking about tonight, is changing, and there seems to be a shift in power in the world, which, from the point of view of the sort of Anglo-American axis, is a disturbing situation.
Well, let's go east of the Rockies. Hey, Freddie in Illinois.
Hello.
Go ahead, Freddie.
Hello, George.
Hey.
How are you?
Good.
I like your guest, but what I would like to ask you, because the fact is your guest, is the astronauts, when they went to the moon, they went through I think it's two force fields of hydrogen.
Well, they went through the Van Allen belt.
Yeah.
The radiation
belt. And then
belt.
One more thing I want to tell you, and then I'll listen to you off the air, and I'm glad everybody's well. The thing is, on Channel 20, a PBS station, here in one night I was watching, and one of the scientists, first people that took a picture of the moon. He says he takes pictures of the moon every once in a while. And on this one night, he caught this picture with a planet behind the moon, and they had kind of a reddish green color to it.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? And so, thanks a million, and I'm going to enjoy to hear what your guest has to say about that. That was on Channel 20 here.
Okay, Freddie. I don't know what he meant by that. I had not heard of that, Andy.
I did come across something on the internet not long ago about something that had been seen either around or above the moon. I mean, the moon's a fascinating object, and I read a book years ago that was going on about all the events that occur on the moon. That, you know, the people who actually watch the moon can see lots of these sort of anomalous events, like clouds of puffs of smoke that appear every so often, or lights that appear on the moon. And I can't remember the name of the chap who wrote the book, Leonard something, I think it was. But I always found that absolutely fascinating, that, you know, these chaps with telescopes watching the moon would be, you know, watching all these wacky things that were going on out there.
Strange anomalies everywhere, huh?
Absolutely. And, you know, that's a wonderful thing, because oftentimes these anomalies end up having a prosaic explanation, but the ones that don't, it's like UFOs, you know. There is a deep and enthralling mystery there that remains unexplained. So I don't know what the planet might be behind, but interestingly enough, there was recent talk about the possibility of there being another moon found around the Earth, or at least an object that was moving alongside the Earth near to it. It would be very, very small, and whether you could actually call it a moon, whether it was actually rotating around us in the same way the moon is. But there does appear to be a very small companion object, or maybe a couple, that that are moving around with the Earth.
You know what kind of mess we'd be in if we didn't have a moon?
Too right. The
it's
moon
amazing,
is an incredible
huh?
object. I mean, it's way too big, you know, way too big for this planet. I mean, we're effectively in a binary planet system. And I've often thought that the one reason aliens might want to visit us is because what's the chances in the rest of the universe of being able to find a surface of a world where you can stand and watch a solar eclipse?
Exactly.
I mean, it's such a profound event, and we've got it right here, that the moon and the sun are exactly the right size to pass across each other. I don't think it happens, and it can't statistically happen anywhere else.
First-time caller, let's go to you, Ryan, in California. Hi.
Hey, yeah, I would just kind of like to comment on this whole genetic manipulation. Everything seems to be pointing with all the, I mean, there's ancient stories from around the world of people or somebody coming here, and look at our technology and the way it's headed. You know, we're splicing genes. We're
yep.
building little spacecraft. They're going out there. If DNA is information, then we were infused with some sort of information a long time ago. Look how different we are from every other species here. There's
yeah.
some. It seems obvious that there's something so very different about us. And it's like where we're at now. Where are we headed with all of this? With the space travel and genetic splicing, we have. You know, that's my comment. We have that in us.
I think you're absolutely right. Our brains are incredible, absolutely incredible. They are so much more than we need. There is so much more going on in there. I saw a little clip of a program last night about kids who, brains worked in strange ways and had all these incredible abilities, you know, with music and art and things like that. And people who have memory could remember everything that's practically told to them. The potential database in our brains is massive. Now, if you try and understand that in terms of how we were 20,000 years ago sitting around in caves, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. This is why I think Sitchin's onto something, because you cannot take that kind of rural hunter-gatherer lifestyle and understand evolution that would create the capabilities and the potential that we now understand, or we're just starting to understand, as being necessary just for that kind of existence. It makes no sense. Something happened then. So I agree with you. And what we do with it, as we become the masters of genetics, as we learn the secrets that the Anunnaki had that time back, and we start to genetically manipulate ourselves, well, I mean, you know, genetically modified people, it's a scary thought. Where are we going with this?
Let's go to Kevin in Riverside, California. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, am I on?
Yes, sir.
Hi, I just had two quick questions.
Okay.
One was, the Anunnaki you say are reptilian, am I correct?
No. They look like us, don't they?
They do. I mean, the reptilian thing is sort of David Icke stuff, slightly different direction.
Oh, because I heard that they were reptilian. Okay, well, if they look like us and they came during the Ice Age, wouldn't it be hard for them to function because of the, you know, freezing temperatures? And also the second question I had was that, if Planet X, as you say, you said it's coming closer, and every so some years it creates some sort of catastrophic natural disaster, am I correct?
There may have been in the past catastrophic natural disasters that occurred, but they wouldn't be particularly frequent. But yes, there is a possibility that it stirred things up and has caused us problems, yes.
But that's from it coming close to our planet, right?
Not particularly close to the Earth. It's a very complicated possibility.
Just close enough to disrupt it.
Oh, right. I just had one thing. I mean, wouldn't people, you know, NASA and, you know, other astronomers, wouldn't we see this by now and know?
I agree.
That's
absolutely
the big theory. Go ahead,
yeah.
Andy.
No, I agree, Kevin. If an object was going to draw close to Earth and cause us that much disruption, then yes. Yes, I mean, and not just NASA either. I mean, there are people out there in their back gardens every night looking for comets.
And by the way, with regards to the Ice Age, not every region on this planet during the Ice Age was frozen over.
No, absolutely.
Some of them continued to have their tropical climates. And I would guess if this happened in modern-day Iraq in the past, that probably was pretty pristine, don't you think?
Well, it may well be that the world has been warming for a long time, and it may well be that the general climate was colder when they were here, and it may well be because they lived on a planet surrounding a brown dwarf, it was by definition colder there. You know, they it's not going to be as hot as we are close to our sun. And one of the reasons I think that they lived longer lives is because they weren't getting constantly irradiated by cosmic rays and X-rays and stuff out of our sun like we are. So their DNA held up better and they live longer. So that's just an aside. But coming here, one of the reasons in the Bible they talk about the generations becoming shorter in years is because that sort of fairly pristine DNA that got transferred from somewhere that was quite safe in terms of cosmic rays comes down to the third rock from the sun and gets absolutely blasted, and all the lifespans of all the people starts to drop off generation after generation. And it may well be that the Anunnaki could only be here for a certain length of time before they either stayed here to die or they needed to leave. I know this sounds a bit disturbing, but I've got this very peculiar idea that the Earth, although we consider it to be some sort of absolute jewel in the crown that's very, very best place to live in the universe, is actually kind of quite a dangerous place, actually, in terms of, you know, its proximity to the sun and how much we get blasted by radiation.
Back to the phones we go. Mill, Wisconsin. Eric. Go ahead, Eric.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Hi.
Hi, Eric.
Well, to quote one of my favorite movies, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures, strange things are afloat at the Circle K, fellas.
One of Carlin's best parts.
Oh, you're not kidding, my friend. Basically, what I'd like to touch on is a couple of callers ago, I heard one of the gentlemen talking about the Nephilim. And basically, that's what I'm thinking is strange. They're digging these things up all over the, all, from what I can see and all the information I've been reading. They're just like you and me, George, but they're 30 feet tall.
They were giants.
Yeah, and they were the sons of the fallen angels and the earth women. And then the bad angels, I guess, came down and made these giants too. And then the bad giants started eating the people. And God said, well, I can't be having that. So instead of destroying them, he sent two of the archangels down, and one went to one side and one went to the other side, and they tricked each other into going to war with each other, and then came the great flood, et cetera, which would explain why they're digging these things up. I just don't understand why there's such a disinformation campaign out there to hide all this information, even with the Planet X. I know it's coming. And from the information I've been reading about that, yeah, it makes sense. I think the poles are going to shift. All these children that are coming out now, I was born in 72 and I was diagnosed with ADD. They put me on the pills. I said, no, you're going to take me off the pills. I got taken off the pills. I got better. I woke up. All these kids that are being diagnosed now with autism, they're not autistic. We just don't know how to operate on their frequency.
Well, that's much like this as well. We are out of time. Andy, I want to thank you for being on the program.
Thanks, George. I'd like to thank you, Lisa, Tom, Lex, and Stephanie for making my occurrence here very, very good. And, of course, to your audience as well, who have been absolutely magnificent.
You've done a great job, and good luck with the work, The Dark Star. And let's see how many people decide to come toward that end of the camp. Thanks again, Andy. For Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norris. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.